The Quality Shares podcast is sponsored by Sharepad, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders.
Hello and welcome back to the Investability podcast. I am John Heumann, founder of Investability, joined again by my co-host Michael Taylor of ShiftingShares.com. How are you doing, Michael?
Pretty good, thanks, John. The sun's shining, so all good.
Yeah, it's been a lovely week. It's been a lovely week. And it's a fairly benign week on the markets as well. So, you know, obviously there's still conflict in Ukraine, but the markets rumble on and seem to be climbing that wall of worry okay this week. What have you been up to?
Trading quite a bit. So, as you know, last week I sold out of Shoe Zone. Lots of intraday stuff this week. So there was an upgrade in Drax. Managed to get filled on that, scalped that. 4D Pharma announced some news, traded that quite a bit. Yeah, there's lots going on, certainly in the intraday market. Betaville has had a few wins recently as well. So, yeah, plenty to do. Not boring, that's for certain.
Indeed. Should we talk about 4D Pharma? So we're gonna come back actually to deep dive subject AB Dynamics, but let's talk about some of the company stories. Let's start with 4D Pharma. So what was the news here?
So the news was it had a drug candidate that had done something better than was expected, I believe. To be honest, I didn't read the RNS in its entirety because I'm not a pharma expert. I'm not really going to understand it. With trades like this, it's what the market thinks, because that is what moves the price at the end of the day. It met the primary efficacy endpoint. It's crucial for the future development of MRX0518. All sounds fairly complicated, but I did see that another major had a drug in a similar category. It paid $1.8 billion for and it had failed. So, I mean, there's the ramp, there's the catalyst for the move. So I got in. There was a big seller in the uncrossing trade, actually, so I managed to get to decent size. And I thought that would be the low of the day. Traded it quite a bit throughout the day on both sides of the book, the bid and the ask. But someone came in and just completely killed it, sold. And then we can see there was a holding RNS all a couple of days after, the day after. Someone had just been selling down. So these are good stocks to trade. Hopefully it will do very well for shareholders. I don't know. I don't really have a view. I'm done with that stock now. It was a trade. On to the next.
Well, there was a lot of excitement on social media about these results. But, I mean, I'm looking at the chart. It looks pretty horrendous. It's been a long, long downtrend. It's very much like my views on a lot of drug discovery. It's a very difficult industry. I mean, I'm not surprised that you're just in and out there.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with so many of these drugs just don't make it. And, you know, if one of them does, then that stock is going to see big appreciations in the share price. But I think we've covered on this podcast before, Motive Bio, you know, their drug, their asset Iclaprim, passed Revive 1 and 2. It had done a phase 3 before the Revive trials. The FDA had fast-tracked it through the application process. And then they decided they needed more data, which was going to cost a lot of money for Motive Bio. And, you know, it went bust. And that is just the harsh reality. It's not enough to pass phase 3 trials. It's got to be approved by the FDA. And that's pretty difficult. It's a gamble, really. Unless you're an expert in this industry, can you really have an edge on this sort of stuff? I don't think so. But as I say, hope it does well for holders. But it's a trade for me.
Indeed. I mean, you know, I guess the things to look out for with these sort of companies is the kind of cash position and burn rate. And it, you know, it looks okay, but not spectacularly okay.
Yeah, I mean, these companies don't make any money. They're reliant on cash injections to fund them. So usually a good trade is, you know, if you are interested in, if there is a catalyst, so let's say it's fully funded, it's raised enough money for a year or so. You know, if you're buying in the placing or after the placing, close to the placing price, you know that there's a lot of people going to be in it and want to see a rise. And if there's a catalyst, you know, so for an example, like a trial later on in the year, That will lift the stock up because punters get excited and people are buying for the results. And you can then de-risk into that rally. So that is, if I was going to swing trade these stocks, that's how I would do it. Same for oilers as well. You know, if an oil company has a big placing and there's a drill scheduled 6 months away, you know, that is can be a good risk to reward trade.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at 4D here, and they raised something like 26 million quid in 2020, but they haven't got a lot of it left. And the operating cash flow number is, I mean, it's a big number, and it's seemingly only getting bigger. So, yeah, I mean, the risks of pharma drug discovery writ large in this company, I would say, still.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good news. If there is a placing, I'd maybe consider it. I'd have to look into the company more. But as for now, it's just a gamble. Does it go high? Does it go low? Not for me.
Well, people do like this company. I mean, it's one of those stocks that really has attracted a lot of, you know, private investor attention. Doesn't mean it's any good, though.
It doesn't, no. There's like lots of stocks. Some of them are good. And especially on AIM, most of them are bad, unfortunately.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, actually, talking of good stocks that private investors like, Games Workshop had a very short statement this week, and the shares went mad.
Yeah, I was confused about that. I mean, it's in line, but, you know, maybe the market, well, obviously the market was expecting worse and the shares have rallied. I don't really have a view on Games Workshop. You know, what do you think about it?
Well, I kind of thought, I mean, it was, you know, it's loved. It's a company that is, you know, it's very much loved by the private investor community. It's had a pretty horrible few months, you know, since we first wrote about it last September. There's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's not a bad company. You know, the issue we've always had has been one of valuation and sort of something to do with the transparency. Not transparency, that's the wrong word. You know, we can't really see where the growth to justify that valuation was going to come from. And, you know, royalties was one of the main things that you know, people are excited about, you know, licensing its intellectual property to television and video game companies. But it's lumpy, unpredictable, so you can't see it. So, no, I think it's a great company, but I just, you know, I can't get my head around why it attracts so much attention. It's had a good few years, but that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the easy money's probably been made. I mean, once it gets to 2 billion, you've got teams of suits pouring over, you know, DCFs and all the fancy calculations and projections that they do. You know, when it was a smaller company, you've arguably got an edge because the market's inefficient and nobody really cares about it because it's too small. And a lot of institutions, you know, they won't look at anything sub 50 million, even sub 100. So, you know, the smaller the company, the more inefficient it is, and the bigger the opportunity. You know, right now I would say it's probably hard to get an edge.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. Like I said, I mean, it's a great company, no doubt about it, but, you know, at the end of the day, it sells plastic miniatures,
which a lot of people have said for many years, and
people do like but I know I'm not gonna be popular saying this, but it doesn't seem to me to be a company that's going to change the world, you know. And there seems to be, because it's niche, you know, there is a limit to how far it can go, I would suggest. That would be my view, which is why I wouldn't get carried away at the valuation that it got to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe it does something with Disney or, you know, who knows? People say all these things, but until it actually happens, it's all guesswork.
Yeah, I've heard, you know, talk of a takeover by Disney, but then, you know, we look at 4D, we'll hear talk of, I'm pretty sure I did see talk of potential,
I'm sure you
a
did.
Potential yeah. takeover. You know, it's almost sort of like magical thinking a lot of the time. You know, if we buy it and this thing is going to happen that we have no control over, and it seems to be like a risky way of actually going about buying shares.
Yeah, I mean, I think buying a stock thinking it's a takeover target alone is not the best idea. I mean, you know, if you bought Fevertree in the last few years thinking it's a takeover target, you'd be disappointed.
Well, indeed. Yeah, you mentioned, you know, that institutional investors get, you know, companies get to a certain size and, you know, that's when they get interested. I hear you had a bit of a run-in with a company this week because you're not an institutional investor.
That's right, yeah. Unfortunately, I was declined access to the analyst call. I'm not sure why companies do that. Seems to me, you know, if you have a, if you're employing a PR company, was it a couple of grand a month, maybe to do what exactly? Fire off a few tweets, publish an RNS. You know, some of them don't even do that. And essentially try and sell the story. And, you know, I'd emailed Tulcan trying to get on the analyst call so I could sort of see the presentation, and got told I couldn't, but they'd send me the deck. They didn't send me the deck. I chased up twice, didn't get the deck. It's just lowly retail.
It's just lowly retail.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe I should change my name to something capital. And
you didn't tell them what company it was.
It was U Group. So I've got no position, but I would have been interested in learning. And sadly, it looks like that might be a bit difficult.
I've never listened to them. What do they do?
Something to do with energy.
Oh, great.
Yeah, well, they've done pretty well out of this energy crisis. There are one a few supplier of last resorts acquisitions. Seems to be doing all right, but yeah, I'd like to know more. Just struggling to find out more.
maybe one for us to come back to on a deep dive.
If we
can get any information out of the company.
Indeed. Yeah, it remains to be seen.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? I mean, you know, because you would expect in this market, you know, in terms of transparency, in terms of, you know, the sort of reporting standards, that if that information is being presented to one group, it should be presented to all groups at the same time.
Well, that's what I think. I mean, if there's no privileged information on the call, why isn't it open? You know, even if just to listen in, you know, even if they just say you're muted, but you can listen in, you know, why are other people getting an advantage? Because it is an advantage. You know, you get to ask your own questions. You get to hear things that potentially might even move the price, because something that might not be in the RNS, the company has thought it's not price sensitive, but then they go say on a call and the price moves upwards. Well, clearly it is, you know, because at the end of the day, this is discretionary. What is sensitive and what's not? You know, I've seen RNS reaches, which is supposed to be the non-price sensitive. I've seen companies spike on an RNS reach. So clearly it was price sensitive because the, you know, the market moved. So it's really difficult to say what is and what isn't. And I just think private investors get the short end of the stick a lot of the time, which is weird because we're the ones who actually buy and sell these things. And if it wasn't for private investors, there'd be zero liquidity. And, you know, half of these companies would be better off in a private market because the only time someone would ever trade is when they do a placing.
I would agree with that. I mean, I do think there is there is a disdain for the private investor community, which I've never really got my head around. And you know, the sort of rules are so strange that they sort of, you know, as you've said, exclude private investors from things for their benefit.
Yeah.
We're excluding you to protect you. What? Makes no sense.
Yeah. It's a load of rubbish, isn't it? And hopefully it will change. But yeah, I mean, There are companies like PI World and Investor Meet Company, which do give quite a lot of access to things, and they seem to be changing things. But yeah, it's a slow process.
I mean, it would be a red flag for me, you know, if a company wouldn't let me into a presentation, even, you know, if I asked nicely.
Yeah,
I it would be a red flag.
Well, is it the company or is it the PR company? Because for all we know, the company might not actually be aware that it's paying money to a PR company to gatekeep and stop people from finding out the story.
But you've been on calls before, so you know that it's not, you know, impossible for you to...
Yeah, it's not impossible.
...given access.
Yeah.
It's an iffy one. And, you know, any PRs listening, just treat private investors with the respect that I think we as a community deserve. Active, you know, probably more active than anyone else, you know, in terms of talking about companies, sharing ideas. I think the private investor community is a great thing and needs a bit more respect.
Yeah, fully agree. You heard it here first.
I didn't, but next, should we talk about Next? Because they had some figures this week which didn't do wonders for the share price.
No, they cut guidance. missed that, unfortunately. It was an open goal trade. Opened up relatively unchanged. I think even moved up a little in the first couple of minutes and then just completely dumped. So I was really disappointed in myself to have missed that, actually, because those sort of trades you need to be hitting. You know, when it's unchanged and there's material information like that and the price hasn't moved, you know, you should be on those. But I mean, the problem is, it's just so much news. It's impossible to cover everything.
Next is a bellwether, so you know a lot of people looking at that. But as you say, there, so the price didn't move until later in the day.
No, so I mean, it was a couple of minutes. So it opened up relatively unchanged. Someone was buying in the first couple of minutes. Took my eye off the ball. Looked 10 minutes later, and I think it dropped like 8% or something. And next is a very liquid stock. Yeah, so I mean that was an easy trade. So well done, anyone who caught that.
Yeah, I mean it ended the week down. I mean they weren't terrible numbers. It's just the tough market. We spoke about this before in respect of shoe zone. You know what's going to happen to consumer confidence in the months ahead. And you know, and next, you know, the bigger you get, I guess, in retail, the more exposed you are to the macro trend rather than the sort of individual levers that you can pull as a company, like Shoe Zone being relatively small, can do. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, next is it's almost too big. It cannot outrun consumer confidence. And the figures on that front, consumer confidence, are terrible at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the good thing I'll say about Next is they are incredibly detailed with the numbers. And, you know, I think you can't fault them on that. You know, and they give regular updates to the market as well. So you're never completely left in the dark as to how the company is performing. And a lot of companies could learn from that as well.
No, Next, in terms of reporting, it's a fantastic company. There is pretty much no one better, as you say, in terms of the detail that they offer. Yes, yeah, so it seemed like a strange one to me. The numbers didn't actually look that bad. I mean, all it said was, you know, they're pulling out of Russia and Ukraine, and you know that was going to be a fairly significant cut to sales and profit guidance. I think 2% cut to sales guidance, 1.2% cut to profits. I mean, it's, you know, it's not great, but it wasn't terrible. It's enough to punish someone for a sort of macro event that they've got nothing to do with, and it's a very well-run company.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it sort of rallied the next day. It opened up, so I think it closed below 62, and then on Friday morning it opened up a little, so it did recover some of that. And if you look at the long-term chart, you know, it's pretty much a non-event. But for a trader in a liquid company like that, 8% is you know, big swing.
Yeah. Well, it's massive. Absolutely massive. The high street is it's a tricky one. I just would be inclined to avoid it right now for anything but a trade. You know, there were lots of figures out on consumer confidence from both the UK and Europe this week, and they were really quite bad. German PMIs showed the steepest rise in overall input costs ever. It's really, really tricky for anyone who's consumer focused, even the best, like Next.
Yeah, we've spoken about this before, but I think it's just better to have companies, you know, even if they're only trades that have tailwinds, which, as I said last week, was sort of the reason I got rid of Shoezone. Great company. Maybe I'll buy back in the future, but I just am not smart enough to hold a view, and I can just see the costs going up. And can you really pass that on to the consumer?
It would indeed. Indeed, I actually don't think we've seen even the half of the cost increases to come yet.
People aren't aware. I mean, most people are aware now that there will be some increase in heating, but you know, it's going to go up by 50%. That is quite a lot. And then in October, it'll go up at least another 20% on top of what it's just gone up. So, I mean, that's a lot.
Well, indeed, and we had the spring statement this week, you know, and there was a lot of expectation that there would be some measures there to help households with their soaring bills, and there really wasn't. I don't know if you paid much attention to it. If you didn't,
I didn't.
It didn't say a lot. No, so there's been a small cut to fuel duty. There's been some zero VAT rated initiatives around insulation and solar panels. You're in the market for solar panels?
I'm not.
Not going to save you any money then. but yeah, it wasn't what people had hoped for from the Chancellor. I think there's, you know, in terms of addressing the cost of living crisis, it really didn't do much at all. There was an increase in the National Insurance Threshold, but is more harmonisation than anything else. And yeah, this is still, you know, we are being heavily taxed, highest tax burden for decades.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to have to do something because soon, you know, I mean, if you're on a couple of hundred quid a month, you've got that sort of extra, and now heating bills and cost of everything eats into that 200. Suddenly, you have to make very real decisions about where you spend your money,
and yeah, I think it's coming.
Which is just going to have a knock-on effect on everything. So, yeah, I mean, you know, over a long enough time frame, I'm a bull, but certainly the next year, I'm not bullish at all. I mean, I'm bullish on trades and commodities and swing trades, and you know, in any bear market, there's always some stocks that are going up. But certainly on the economy, I'm no professional economist, but I'm not bullish at all on that.
No, well, I think it's a very sensible position to take at the moment. But even commodities, you know, you know, one should be bullish because there are lots of factors which seem to be, you know, squeezing supply, very bullish for those producing those commodities. But it is so volatile. I mean, the trading risk must be huge in commodities at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I remember 3% in oil, that used to be a huge move, and it's something we're just used to now. I mean, it's not normal. Really isn't. Yeah.
Well, Brent's done up 10% this week, 10.8%.
Yeah, I mean, I just would not want to take any overnight risk on these sort of, you know, BP, Shell, you know, huge stocks. And if they gap up like 1 or 2% or something, you can be massively offside. Because oil might gap down, or you know, who knows? It's any sort of, you have to size down and you know, to factor in that heightened volatility.
Well, it just seems to me that you have to be on the ball every moment of the day, because you know there are things happening almost on an hourly basis that will shift that price up or down. It's who knows what will open at tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy world. I mean, there's so much opportunity, but yeah, I think before, you could be a private investor and not really focus on the macro environment that much. But now I think you have to take some sort of view and factor that in, because, you know, even with little companies like Shoezone, you know, the macro environment was stable. You know, all you really needed to focus on was Shoezone and the company itself. But now that can easily be affected by things going on in the world.
Absolutely. No, you know, I've often thought this, you know, when I actually started in this business, you did, as you say, you focus on the companies, you know, pure analysis. Mm-hmm. And I think monetary policy, you know, since the great financial crisis has really, really skewed how we look at the market, how we look at investing, and, you know, how we approach the whole thing. And it's macro matters now. Much more than it ever did, I would say. I mean, it's always massive, but it just seems now that you can't escape it. Mm. Even though they say, I think you tweeted this week, the stock market is not the economy.
It's not, no, it's not. But
seems to be a bit more at the moment, though.
Yeah, but I mean, it seems crazy to me that the market can just discount all of this stuff that's happening. But yeah, it seems to me that there's a good risk-to-reward trade on the short side for a lot of companies, because it's just not priced in. I mean, I said a few weeks back, if a company announces in line, not much really happens. Or if it announces ahead, it sort of goes up a little. But if you're short and it's a bad trading update, then, you know, it just crumbles.
Yeah. I mean, there was actually over in the US, I was looking at, I do keep an eye on the NASDAQ, and one of the big losers this week was Adobe. You know, that's great. Again, great company. Right. Fantastic company. Soft numbers, soft outlook. Got absolutely smashed, 10 hit by 10%. And the NASDAQ had a really good week this week. But yeah, you know, as you say, any miss is getting punished.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone knows of any companies that are like that, then let me know. But there's one I'm looking at now called ProCook.
Okay, I know ProCook, yeah.
Yeah, so it listed last year and there was no new money raised. It was a complete sellout for existing holders, and I thought that is going to be a cracking short at some point, I'm sure. Thought that about Parsley Box as well. I thought that was a COVID float, and sadly didn't short it, which is a shame, because I think it's 95% down or something crazy like that. But I mean, the way I see it with ProCook, it sets traded, okay, it's not the most liquid, but let's say that has an inline or an ahead, is it really going to move that much? But if it has soft numbers, it will get absolutely thumped, I think. So that I've not got no position now. They said they're going to do a trading statement in April, so which is coming up quickly. But yeah, companies like that. Same with Tortilla, which is Mex. Yeah, couldn't get any borrow on that. There's money to be made by taking a macro view and applying it to companies, I think.
Basically, the Pro Can Float was found as cashing in. Cashing in.
Exactly.
And for me, I must admit, I don't know much about the company in terms of how it trades, but I do know its products. I mean, it sells kitchenware.
Is it any good?
It's all right. As do many other companies. It sells kitchenware. That's it.
Mm.
It doesn't strike me as a premium type business. And one I looked at last year, that was a relatively new float, and I had a look at it because the shares looked like they were wobbling. Was Victorian Plumbing?
Did you short them? Because you'd be very happy if you did.
I know. I said I wasn't buying. And I outlined that bear case. But again, it was that IPO. The founders cashed out. They didn't raise a lot of money for any other purpose other than to help. Their major shareholders, that the founding family, actually cash in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a bit of a red flag to me. If you're raising money, I would think that the only reason you should go to market to raise money is because you want to grow that business, and you're raising money to reinvest, and you have a plan. And I just didn't see it there.
Yeah, I mean, these people are selling out because they think it's a really good time to sell. So is that really a great time to buy when the people who actually own the business are thinking now is a good time to sell?
Precisely.
And I get it. Sometimes, they might come to market and they might sell some because, for them, they want the liquidity. They want to sort of cash in something. But if they're materially selling out lots, you've got to think why. I mean, we've seen it plenty of times with private equity. I mean, Doc Martin's Aston Martin, Phil, I remember he covered that and
he nailed that.
He really laid into that. I remember.
Yeah, before the IPO, actually.
Yeah,
we were both still at the IC.
Yeah, completely crazed. But it's just they're all selling. Is now the time to be buying? So with it, I don't really take any IPOs. I took loads in 2020 because they were all just skyrocketing. But now, sort of, it would have to be something really special for me to actually write a ticket.
Is anyone actually trying to float at the moment? It would be a brave company that tries to come to market.
There's a couple. I've had a few brokers tell me that the deals are getting harder to sell, and there's not that many of them around. So it's not a great time to be raising money, but it's a cyclical business.
SharePad is an all-in-one platform for private investors and traders, providing in-depth data on everything from shares, funds, ETFs, and more across the UK, US, and Europe. With your subscription, you get live updates from UK Alliance News and RNS, and access to powerful stock screening and portfolio management tools. Visit shareScope.co.uk to find out more about SharePad, and if you haven't subscribed before, you can get your second month free by using the Investability promotional code, which is the word invest.
Talking of companies that raise money, should we turn to our deep dive, AB Dynamics? Because before we started recording, I think one of the things that you'd observed was that they had actually had a really successful raise.
Yeah, so this was back in 2019. They had good results. The stock rallied for a couple of weeks, and then they took advantage of that and raised, I think it was about 50 million or something, at a slight discount through an ABB. So the good advantage of an ABB is it doesn't leak.
ABB being
accelerated book build. Yeah, exactly. And I think the share price was 25 quid at the time. They raised at 22.
Well, it's not 25 quid now.
It's not, no. But I mean that it was a good placing. They had 5 million open offer, which is a good thing to do. A lot of companies don't do that, which is weird to me. The first person that you should ask is your current shareholders, but as we know, that's not actually the case.
That's what our primary bid's for, isn't it? I mean, it is getting better.
Slowly. Yeah, it's getting better. But I've often found that the best deals aren't on primary bid, sadly.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. Right, AB Dynamics. Let's go back to the beginning then. So, you know, it got away a decent place in when the share price was a lot higher than it is today. First of all, let's start with what it does. And actually, I don't think this is not quite as easy to discern as you would have thought.
Yeah, all I know is that you test cars.
Well, indeed. And to be honest, I've actually thumbed through the various presentations and notes, and that's kind of where I am as well. There's obviously some technology there, but they talk about being a designer and manufacturer of simulation and testing equipment. So they're working with car companies to help them get their cars on the road, basically.
That's what it sounds like, yeah.
Quite how it does that isn't entirely clear from the materials they put out, but that's what it does. And it's a pretty good, it's a big business. I mean, it's not tiny. You know, we're talking about sort of 60 million quid of turnover. So, you know, there's obviously demand for what it does. We'll come back to the kind of raw financials, but let's look at the raw chart first. That looks pretty horrible to me.
I would not be buying here. I mean, you probably know my strategy is momentum, breakouts and just trend following. So, I mean, it's below all of the moving averages. The moving averages are pointing down. It looks like the last in April 2020 got around to about this level and bounced. So you could say there's support there, and maybe there's value in it for investors, but it doesn't fit my strategy. So yeah, I wouldn't be buying here.
No, I'm looking at the chart over the long term, and yeah, I mean it had a you know, lovely run up, and then as you say, dropped during COVID, but it's back. Pretty much where it started at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's understandable. So, you know, whilst it is a great business and there will be lots of tailwinds for it, you know, I mean, I've heard it spoken that, you know, the transition to electric vehicles is a particularly potentially lucrative opportunity for AB. But the reality of the car market at the moment, the car manufacturing industry, is that it's in a bit of trouble because of the supply chain crisis.
Yeah, I think I've read that the car dealers are actually making a fortune on used cars and not so much new cars.
Well, they can't get the stock. So there's no new car stock. So yeah, Pendragon, for example, had some great numbers this week. Profits, record profits of 83 million. The gross profit per unit on used cars up 39%. Used cars is where the market's at the moment. But that's only because dealers can't get new cars.
Yeah, and I guess if you think about macro view, are people going to be buying as many new cars in the coming year when they're thinking about saving money?
Indeed. You know, I mean, the whole car industry has been really powered by finance as well. Really, one of the big questions that anyone should have about the car market is how are people going to pay for their cars? Are lenders still as willing to lend as they were before? You know, it is a macro call. And used cars, you know, are in demand and, you know, have really helped the dealerships to deliver these record results, how long does that last? You know, does it last as long as the supply chain crisis? You know, we don't know when that's going to be resolved. When is the new car market going to bounce back? Will people continue to pay over the odds for used cars?
Who knows? I mean, what people might do is just not change the car. And that'll stop people buying new cars. Because, I mean, if you've got a car already and you're worried about money, do you really want to upgrade it? You might trade it down, but, you know, if the one that you've got works, why bother?
They do say that the most environmentally friendly car you can have is the one you already own.
I saw that, yeah. So basically run the car that you've got into the ground and be environmentally friendly.
And, exactly.
That's what I'm going to do with mine.
Don't buy new cars. But yeah, change car as infrequently as possible. It's a funny one, isn't it? Like, it's sort of cars and status. And, you know, there is a feel-good factor for buying a new car. It's a great thing. It's good fun. But
have you ever bought a new car?
Yeah, once.
Yeah.
And I ran it into the ground.
Oh, well done.
Ran it into the ground. It was taken away on the back of a lorry. That's a, you know, get one of the grabber claws to get it out of my back garden because it basically died. And I bought a second-hand car again and I ran it into the ground.
Yeah, very environmentally conscious. But for me, I just don't really see the point in getting a new car when I can just keep that in my trading account and make more money. I mean, the idea that the car is an asset, I don't really understand that because it just depreciates. It doesn't really go up in value unless it gets sold that it becomes vintage, in which case it does go up in value.
I mean, it has been an appreciating asset this year, quite strangely. So many used cars are worth more today than they were 12 months ago, with 5,000 less miles, fewer miles on the clock. So
yeah,
it has been a funny year for the used car market. But you know, that's only because the new car market has run into all sorts of troubles. So let's go back to AB Dynamics. So
yeah,
this is a company that basically tests vehicles in simulations and on track for major auto manufacturers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, I look at the numbers, you know, you look at the top line, and it's continuing to grow. What worries me is where are the profits? So, I mean, I'm looking at the pre-tax line, you know, so for 2021, I mean, we've gone from 11 million in pre-tax in 2019 to 3.8 today. So whatever's happening here, it's not translating into profit growth. You know, you see the top line growing, but it's not translating into profit growth. And I guess you could argue that it's probably had a bit of a tough year because of the challenges to the car industry. But at the same time, you know, this is a company that's presumably testing cars for release in X years time, for models that are coming out in the future. Why is it going backwards?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at 30 times earnings. It's not exactly cheap either, is it?
No. I mean, it's not cheap. I mean, but then, you know, it is a good company.
Yeah.
You know, it does what it does very well. I guess, you know, it's a perfect example of the fact that, you know, you can't escape macro.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was, and maybe still is, family run. And I remember when it was a tiny business at £2. Now, I think I actually owned them at £2 and sold them at £2.50 or something, and was very pleased with myself. But obviously then it got to £30. Yeah, just zoomed up. I mean, if you look at the chart from 2015 to, you know, the summer of 2019, that is just a one-way trend. Didn't even go below the 200 moving average. And you know, the trading, you know, never say trading is easy, but sometimes you just have to find a good company, you know, follow the technicals, allow for some volatility, and just ride it. And sometimes that's all you need to actually make a life-changing amount of money, because you only need to hit, you know, a 5 or a 10-bagger, you know, once to actually make a lifetime of trading or investing worthwhile.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, again, you know, it's a question we often ask ourselves. Is like, you know, we look back at 10 bags and ask, can it do it again?
Mm.
And, you know, and from here, you know, you're looking at the growth rates of this business. I'm just looking at the top line, going back to their preliminary results presentation. It's not a pretty picture. You know, things were going backwards. You know, driving robots going backwards, test products going backwards, simulation did better, but as the company, you know, points out, that's lower margin. So and acquisitions really, you know, boosted the top line, 5.9 million at 65 and a bit million. So, you know, if it wasn't for acquisitions, this business is going backwards.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I see it like Games Workshop. I think, you know, the easy money's probably being made. Although that said, it is only still 250 million. So, you know, maybe I'm wrong, and, you know, it could actually double and not be a large company.
Mm.
So yeah,
well, there is something that I saw in you know, in the results presentation that I'm looking at right now, and it just bugs me. It's the thing that niggles me. It's when a company talks about the size of its addressable market. Now they are talking about the addressable market size of 6.2 billion. They're making 60 million quid. I mean, you know, it seems to be almost an irrelevant figure in the context of this company.
Mm.
But it's dangled there in front of you, going, you know, look how big this market is. And I don't like that.
I don't agree with TAM, because, you know, it's so hard to calculate, isn't it? And who really knows? Because it's just a figure you pluck from midair based on a few assumptions. And of course, the incentive is to always jack up the TAM, because no one can really test it and say, well, actually, it's only, you know, 5.8 billion and not 6.1. Or you can just make whatever number you want, and it's more attractive. And people do that in VC all the time. You know, there's a saying, investors want bees, you know, billions. You know, if you're realistic in your TAM, you just don't get the money because someone comes along and says, oh, you know, our market's, you know, the our market's Mars, and you know, they'll get the people who write the checks. So I'm not saying that this company is doing that, but there is an incentive to be bullish on the TAM because it's, you can't quantify or test it.
Yeah, and I mean, from my perspective, I think it's kind of irrelevant. You know, what is the company doing to really tap into that addressable market? How much of it does it think it can take?
Yeah.
You know, it's talking about an addressable market size increasing at a compound annual growth rate of 24%. Well, we're not seeing that in the company's figures. So What do I care?
Yeah.
What do I care?
Well, let's hope you haven't got any questions, John, because the PR company is Tilken.
Oh dear.
So good luck with that one.
Yeah. I'm sounding pretty negative here. I know people like this company. It is a good company.
Yeah, I agree.
Things well. It's, you know, my view is that, as I say, you just can't outrun the industry that you're in. Or you can, but not by that much. You know, you can't escape the trends that affect the rest of your industry. So, and we know that there's been some weakness in the new car manufacturing market, mainly as a result of chip shortages, which would affect AB Dynamics very badly because it's in sort of high-end systems, testing, autonomous driving, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, the lead times for some of these cars now, I think a new Range Rover is pretty difficult to get because the demand's there, but the chips aren't, and the fancy bits that they put in them are not there.
Indeed.
So that is going to have an effect.
Indeed. It's a difficult market, you know, and it's subject to all the same sort of problems and pressures that many, many other companies are exposed to, particularly around the supply chain. However, you know, I guess the bull case for a company like this, and it's where perhaps the total addressable market would start to attract people, is that this is where driving is going. And, you know, a couple of bad years, pandemic-induced bad years, are perhaps hiding the potential of this company and certainly the potential in the markets, in the car market, you know, where it's going, and the fact that it's actually aligned itself very nicely to where the automotive industry is going.
Yeah, and I think inside is still on a decent amount. So that's always a positive. Yeah, I think, you know, it can sound like we are quite negative on some of these businesses, but, you know, we don't own them. Because obviously, if we did, we'd be bullish, because that would be why we own them. So, I mean, just because we don't own them doesn't mean that we're being negative. It's just, you know, we don't like them enough to own them.
Well, I guess you want to kick the tires, you know?
Yeah.
No pun intended. But, you know, kick the tires, ask the questions. So you know, as I said, you know, here we go. Also, autonomous driving, electric vehicles. You know, there's quite a few slides in the presentation about ESG. Which
ESG? Oh no!
Exactly the moment I said it, I realized, is that a red flag too?
I think it's a buzzword, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's certainly a buzzword, but I mean, it does make sense. You know, we are going towards, you know, net zero. The political commitments have been made. Mm-hmm. You know, are we underestimating that at some point this market's really going to, you know, when the supply chain issues are resolved, it's going to go guarantee, and that AB Dynamics is actually in the right place.
Who knows? I guess we'll find out in 6 months.
Yeah.
I'll probably rally next week.
Well, like everything else.
Yeah.
Purple bricks.
Yeah.
Fantastic week.
Yeah, that's a good trading signal. That whatever we talk about, buy it because it'll go up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, you're right. You know, this is where the chart is where it was, you know, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, you haven't lost anything during the pandemic. You know, you can't imagine it's going to get a lot cheaper. I mean, it's you know, it's not growing quickly, but it's a profitable, well-run company. You know, I do like to look at sort of ranges and think, yeah, if it gets to 10 quid, if it gets to, then I'll be interested. It's kind of done that. You know, it's not stupidly valued.
Mm-hmm.
It's profitable. I mean, some of the quality metrics don't look wonderful. I mean, return on capital is pretty low. Operating margins are, you know, kind of 7%, not great. But then, you know, as I say, this has been a bad year.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the chart. So it did go through 10 quid twice and rallied sharply So, I mean, there'll be a lot of people looking at that level. And this was in 2020. You know, that is a good support level. So if you're buying around, you know, if, let's say you wanted to trade it, you're buying slightly below 10. You know, there's good risk reward there, in my view, especially if it's a good company with a tailwind and people, you know, that people are looking at that level and they'll buy it with you. Yeah, I mean, the key is you might get a lot of buyers and then the company carries on falling. Then you've got all those traders selling, which can push it down even more. I mean, you've got to think about that because it's not the most liquid of companies. I'm not sure how much you can buy before you move the price, but it is SetQX, so market maker traded. But yeah, if you have a bottom picking strategy, that could be a good trade. And that's all you need.
Yeah, it's kind of looking interesting. I mean, they had a trading update this week, you know, Siggins guidance, acknowledging
good.
Which is good, acknowledging the slightly difficult market conditions, you know, sitting on net cash. You know, it's, in that sense, it's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay. You know, a tough year, but kind of temporary. Just stop talking about total market size.
yeah. Maybe they'll listen. Maybe they won't.
Maybe. No, I think it's okay. I mean, I want to look at this company more. Yeah, this has piqued my interest. I mean, say, so I just don't think you can hide from the fact that the world is moving towards electric vehicles.
Yeah, I think you did buy something that we covered on the podcast before, didn't you? Was it Sumero? We covered Sumero, it on the podcast,
yeah.
And then you had to look and you liked it.
I did like it. They're having a few good weeks. I think what's his name, the Naked Trader.
Now, okay.
Robbie Burns bought some, and the shares jumped. over the last couple of weeks, but back down where they were anyway.
I think there's probably people who trade that.
Yeah.
I mean, so some people move prices, and if you can find out who moves prices,
Robbie Burns. There.
Well, Robbie Burns. Yeah, I'll have to sign up.
Well, it's good for you, but not so good if you're a long-term investor. But I mean, you know, the long term is what matters, I guess, for most people who are putting their money into the market. You know, I think trading is a rarer thing, you know, for certainly most PIs to do. And they do. Anyway, so we digress. AB Dynamics. I'm not sure. I'm sort of wiggling my thumb sideways here. It's interesting.
Yeah, as I said, there could be a trade if it gets to support. Let's see.
Absolutely. Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you, Michael, as always.
Thanks, John.
And thank you all for listening. If you have any more ideas for next week's deep dive or future deep dives, we're getting a sort of growing list now. I don't think we'll declare what we're going to talk about next week because it's a bit of flexibility.
Yeah. I think we should probably say as well that we don't get paid by anyone to talk about these companies because there are podcasts out there. Where they're paid to talk about companies. We choose companies of our own choice. We're free to be bullish or bearish or just neutral.
AB Dynamics would be a bit cross if they'd paid us to talk about
it. I think they would, yeah. yeah. Although give it a neutral rating, so
we did.
Be too cross. Yeah.
Excellent. Anyway, thank you very much, Michael. And as I say, thank you all for listening. Please leave us a review or head over to Michael's site, shiftingshares.com, or mine, invest-ability.co.uk. We'll be back again next week. Speak soon.